welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
Hey, so we are continuing. We are wrapping up our series on values. And to give you a very quick recap, we've had Valdez spoke twice on values. He just spoke last week. Rick spoke one time. I kicked it off. So if you want to get caught up on the value series, you can go back on our podcast and go to neighborhood.love to get all that. But to reintroduce why values are important, and then just like a definition of what a value is. Values are important because leadership tells you how to get from point A to point B. Vision is creating an idealistic future of the next week, 5 months, 10 years of your life. You're saying this is the vision for my body, our marriage, our work, our business, whatever it might be. And then your values is what drives you and how to get there on purpose. And a value, forward-facing, seems very similar to like a law or a rule or a command. But commands or rules or laws are curated usually by a governing board or a legislative body or like the cool people in your friend group, right? Whoever it is, they decide this is the command, this is the rule, this is what we do. And then there is lines. Either you're in or out, you're sacred or you're not. You are included or you're excluded. The laws can, and the language of the laws can determine. Those are really good. We need those, right? Very, very important. But the difference of a value is a value can appear like a rule or a law. And you say, no, we value love. No, is that what we're talking about? That's what you talk about. Value love, right? And if you live in a commandment, you're like, all right, Lommel, then the way that I think love should be, that stands for you and Adrian as well, because it's a command. There's one way of interpreting it, means there's one way of experiencing it. A value says, we are going to experience love. And how we access that, how we embody that, how we process that can be wildly different, right? So the way that that maybe I express love to Nikki might look very different than the way you express love to your partner, because you're way cooler than me, Hannah, all right? So you're way smarter than me, right? So there's going to be different ways of how we extend that, how we experience it, but it can still fall under the banner of love. Now, there's this wildly expansive space of how we can have a shared value, but the way it's manifested, the way that it's embodied, the way that it looks like, the way that it's celebrated can be vastly different, but still included. But the key thing of a value is you can have stated values. You can say, I value love, right? That is my value. But then the fruits of it, the receipts of what you do are not love, but maybe control, maybe power. Maybe always being right, right? Or you always having power over the other person. Then you can say, well, actually, you have a stated value of love, but the lived experience of your value looks more like this, right? So you have to be not just consciously aware of what your values are. You have to be, like, checking in. Is this actually a value of mine? Am I actually doing it? Am I embodying it? Am I expressing it? Am I living it? And is it coming out around in my life and the people around me? I know of, they're not here. All right, good, I could talk about them then. No, I'm joking. we had one couple that we shared forever ago of you can do a value sort, which is like a exercise or a process, a tool of where you can come up with like your five values as an individual or as this, they did it as a couple. And they were texting me and sharing with me what their values were and the process. And for them, it was super, super helpful. Did anyone else do that by chance? Did you find it helpful? What did you find? She said, absolutely. Yes, Chris, thank you for sharing that resource with me. I'm indebted for you for my entire life. Can I throw money at you, Chris, is what she said. Yes. You got it to six. That's fine. That's great. And she looks at it every day. Wow. Way to go, Dana. I'm really proud of you. Okay. We should just end the message there. Don't we just end on a win? George Costanza, and on a high note. So thank you for doing it. So if you still want to do it, you can Google value sort. To me, values are super, super important. And today we're talking about beauty. It's our last one. And I love talking about beauty. I actually love all of them. But I love talking about beauty, because beauty is this idea that it's everywhere, and we all experience beauty in some shape or form, but there's some things we experience beauty in that we feel embarrassed by, right? Does anyone have a guilty pleasure that you try not telling anyone, right? Like Dave Lommel shared with me, we've known each other for, 15 years, and I said, bring your guilty pleasure to a student ministry thing we did for leaders, and Dave brought romance novels. It's great. I'm like, he's like, you said bring your guilty pleasure. I'm like, this guy is awesome. So, right, you have things that you find beauty in. I did not plan that, just so you know. I don't think about that all the time. But when you think about beauty, it's going to bring different feelings. It's going to bring arousal. And that word means a lot more than what some of you think it might mean, all right? It means it's drawing something out of you. It's moving you towards that person, that idea, that place. Right? But it's so nuanced of why we find beauty in what we do. So we're going to do an exercise. And I'm going to tell you on the very front, I am not going to make you say what you're thinking. I can't make you. I'm not going to ask you. That's the better word. I'm not going to ask you what you are to share what you're thinking. All right? But I want you, you can close your eyes or you can look at the ceiling, whatever helps you. I want you to think of the most beautiful thing in the world. And maybe you have several. Just get in your mind. The first thing comes to mind, the most beautiful thing in the world. Okay. You guys got it to some degree? Okay. You don't have to tell me what it is. Who here thought of like a destination or a place? Could be a ski hill. All right. Wow. That is a lot of you. Awesome. Okay. Who here thought of a person that wasn't you? Even a lot. That's all right. Who here thought of an experience? Did anyone think of an experience like jumping in the pool? All right. Did anyone think of food? I did. All right. Okay. Did anyone think of God? Thanks, my man. All right. Did anyone think of themselves? Yeah. All right. This is perfect. So you have an idea of a person, you have an idea of an experience, you have an idea of like a destination. It could have been an object. It could have been a memory in your kid. It could have been a meal. It could have been God. But it's so funny. When we think of beauty, we don't always think of ourselves. And I think that like maybe we want to, but we're told we're not. That is not humble. That is not kind to think of yourself as being beautiful. It always has to be external. And rarely, right, and you've heard me say this a bunch of times, rarely when we think about God do we put beauty. Rarely we put good. So I talk to a lot of people about God. The number one thing, the top two things people think about God is angry or disappointed, one of the two, and distant or not relevant. By far, those are the top, not even close. Everything else beyond that is not meaningless, but it's distant. And so what we're trying to do, why it's of value, is we want to help people rethink what beauty is, that beauty can be within. Beauty does not always have to be somewhere else, and that God can be beautiful. But, like, how do we distinguish what beautiful is, right? So we are evolutionary people. So some of the things that we find beautiful in other humans isn't just because they're dreamy. All right, like I am the picture of fitness. All right, why people are like, Chris, you have such dreamy eyes. I'm like, no, evolution says I have a perfectly asymmetrical face. Right, Dave? Thank you. So, right, it's science says that you're gonna be what we find attractive is gonna be something asymmetric. There are certain body types for all genders of what we might find attractive that can come down to an evolutionary purpose. Now, we have a whole other part of science that goes into like your upbringing, your childhood, your trauma, your education, all of that, all that intersectionality also determines what we find beauty. But usually the way we think about beauty is defined by someone else, right? It's, and I say this all the time, we have the beautiful people, and beautiful people dictate what is good, what is sacred, what is tolerated, what is decent. I love talking about it. And then anything that doesn't fall under that is usually considered indecent, even though it's not indecent. Just because it's a fit here means it's out. And so we are drawn to things, evolutionary, but we're also drawn to things because of our upbringing, as how we are made, how we came together, how we come into knowledge of things. And this is where it gets weird, right? Because we're like, well, why do I like that kind of lasagna? Or why do I like that celebrity? Or why do I like that kind of music? And maybe you're aware of it. Most of us aren't. And so since we're not, we're like, I got to put that freak flag back down because I can't let everyone know that I really love the song Mbop and I listen to it 100 times a day. Anyone? No? Okay, so that was a test. So, but there's things that you maybe, like, to spill the tea on my partner, right? The thing that my wife, and I'm confident I can say this, that she laughs the most at is talking animals. She loves talking animals, right? And she doesn't need to tell everyone that. She just knows it. And if there's a talking animal, I laugh because I know my wife is going to laugh. Why? We have no idea. She just finds that it's beautiful. Okay? So there's reasons why we find beauty. For me, the place I find the most beauty is, and it's not a bit, is Chubb Lake, and it's Jay Cook. Because my parents brought me there when I was a kid, and I played with my siblings. I brought my kids there, and they played with their siblings. I still, as an adult, go there with my siblings and their kids, my niece and nephews, and they run around, and they're drawn to the same twisted, weird cedar trees that they try putting their head in and get stuck in, the same way that I did. They splash in the same water. And I find it so sacred is from being a little kid being dropped off there for day camp to now showing up to what I call my secret trail, which is not secret. There's a sign. It's posted that it's a trail. I call it my secret trail. Brings me so much joy because I find it so beauty. I find it so inspiring. So we're going to talk about beauty in three things, and it's going to be very short. It's why do we find beauty in God? Or why, I should say, why I find beauty in God. Beauty of self and beauty of the other, right? So beauty of God. What makes God so beautiful, right? And there's a lot of different ways. I'm going to go into just one specific. Is God so beautiful because I get everything I want? And God's like a slot machine, and I just put enough prayers in, I crank the thing, and out comes the desired result? Is God so beautiful because God is so easy to understand? Is God so beautiful because God's word and we read the Bible and it makes just crystal clear sense? We don't have to argue or debate on anything. We say one true meaning, of course, right? No. Is like we were just talking about the book by Thomas J. Ord, God Can't, right? Does that make God beautiful? To me, way more beautiful. The idea of God can't do some stuff. But does that mean someone else might be a different place? I'm saying, I can't wrap my mind around this, doesn't feel beautiful? Of course. Right? God is so much bigger than we could ever understand. And it's that infinite of knowing and the infinity of unknowing, to me, that makes God so beautiful. But I'm going to talk about one thing. The reason, to me, that God is so beautiful is that God is radically, radically accessible. Right? We see God pictured throughout the Bible in many different things. God is a bush that can talk, that's on fire, that doesn't bring any smoke, doesn't consume any wood, but can communicate to Moses. God can speak through a donkey. God is spoken through wind. God is represented as a rock that's higher than I. God is described as being this foundation where we can build a house that is not on the shifting sand. We see God as light. We see God as a pillar of fire traveling around the sky. We see a God as a nurturer and providing manna. We see God providing water. We see God as being the groom and the church is its bride, right? There's all these different depictions. So many. God is a shepherd, leads us down to rest by moving water, right? There's a God that prepares a table for us in the midst of our enemies. And God says, come and dine with me. God tempts us to say, come and taste the goodness of God. All throughout the Hebrew Bible, all throughout the New Testament, there is this invitation to access, to consume, to take in God. And in John, it says that God became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. Emmanuel, God with us. That we have a Jesus-looking God. If you want to know, like, what God cries about, what God flips tables over, what keeps God up at night, right? Look at the person of Jesus. Jesus says, you see me, you see my Father. And he is in me and I in him. And he even says in John 15 or 17, Jesus says, if you can't understand what I'm getting at, if you can't like really comprehend the words, which means if you can't even believe what I say to be true, Jesus says, I'm happy for you. That's great. What does he say? Can you at least just do the beautiful things that I'm doing? Like, he moves beyond this idea of you have to have this intellectual belief in order to do the things. Jesus is saying, no, just if you just do these things, which is loving people, believing people, seeing humanity in people, God is saying, this is who I am, this is what I do, which I love. But you see, the person of Jesus is radically accessible. People come up and grab Jesus, and they're saying, time to do some miracles, my man. People are grabbing him saying, I have a question for you. They're interrupting him. They're falling out of the ceilings. They're doing all these things. And Jesus doesn't seem to really get angry, right? Some of us get bothered that people have the audacity to call us instead of text us. And we're like, who do they think they are, right? And Jesus is like, I'm down with it. And I believe is that it's showing a picture of who God is. Is God is radically accessible. So much, right? In Genesis, which I believe to be a story that a group of people are writing to tell a bigger story, but still tell a story. It says, in the beginning, God spoke and created all these things. And God got together with its homies, and it's the Spirit. It is the conscious, eternal Christ, and it is God. And it's the idea of what we call the Trinity, which is never in the Bible itself, right? But it helps. It's a word that helps make sense. And it says, let us make them in our image. This is a picture. This is a story that's saying whatever this is, whatever this collective energy and life force and love and stardust and energy and so many beautiful things, like what we are now is in this. And this is all creation. Let us make this in our image. It is this collective experience. It's not let us make something that is kind of like side B. It's not like, hey, we should make something that gets close to us, but never reaches our level because we're so much better. It is this idea of this collective experience. And I forgot to put the picture up. I promise I'm a good pastor. But there's this painting by this artist. I've showed it several times. And it's a picture of the Trinity, of God, Spirit, and conscious eternal Christ. They're holding hands, and there's movement, and it's like there's music playing. And they leave this part open with the two hands, and in the fourth space, there's a mirror. And this is way old, and where people would walk up to experience the painting and could see themselves in the mirror as a fourth person of that Trinity, a fourth person in that circle, in that dance, that we are not excluded from the circle. We're not excluded from the song. We're not excluded from the beat of the kingdom of God. God is saying, let us make them in our image. It is this collective experience, this radical accessibility to not just be able to see what God is doing, not just to appreciate what God is doing. God is saying, we are collectively doing this. The accessibility is God is not somewhere else. God is here. The accessibility isn't I have to be good enough to do certain things and then I get the best of God. The best of God is in every breath. It's in every heartbeat. If that's true, there is no distance between me and God. Richard Rohr, a Franciscan priest, has just a banger of a quote. He says, the only distance, the only separation between us and God is a separation that we convince ourselves is there. That's the only separation from God. So when I feel distant from God, when I feel unworthy of acceptance from God, whatever it might be, I am making that up myself. God is close, God is within. And if that's true, then the whole world's my home. Everywhere I go, I can not just access the kingdom of God, I just can't experience the God, I get to participate actively with God. So what makes God beautiful to me is the radical accessibility and availability of God, that God is within. So if that's true, right, what about ourselves? When we think ourselves being beautiful, I'll use myself. When I think about myself, and I have if you don't know me, I have a very high view of myself, right? I'm a big fan of Chris Sauter. But even that, when I think about when I am a good pastor, it's usually I'm a really good pastor when I get to do these three things. And during COVID and during the transition, there's some things that stopped, right? Like a bit, one of the interesting things is when previously I was in a system where people really wanted to know my opinion, right? And I'm saying this in the most kind way, right? People really want to know my opinion. But that was because we had a culture of where the pastor's opinion was closer to God's opinion than maybe you could hear for yourself. And so people would say, should I date this person? Should I go to this college? And those are all very, very positive things, right? But once you remove of saying, no, actually, Zoe, you have access to the same God that I do. And this beauty and this goodness and this wisdom is infinitely everywhere. I can help dial that in. I can help you discover those things, but you don't need that. And coming out of that system, being in the system we're in now, there's this wild, I keep using the same word, availability, accessibility to God that we can collectively experience together. So feeling beauty isn't just tied to the things I do, the things I produce, or the things I shed. Because we think about beauty, we usually attach to our body. And I am beautiful. How many times have you looked at, like I was sending a friend of mine some pictures from, I don't know if you don't follow me on social media, I don't know what you're doing with your time, but I put a picture from me in college. We were dressed up as the, God, I wish it was the BC Boys. It was not the BC Boys. It was NSYNC, right? We were supposed to be dressed like NSYNC. I'm wearing like this white tank top trying to look like tough, and I'm like, I'm not tough. And I have my big afro. And I shared the picture of like at some point you can look at yourself and say, oh, I was beautiful because I looked like this, or I weighed this, or I had this kind of body type. I look very different from when I was 19 years old, alert to media, right? But when we attach beauty of ourselves tied to things that we feel like we should be, but we're not, so then I'm not beautiful because I don't weigh this much? Or my teeth used to look like this, now they look like this? I used to have no hair there, now I have hair there? Or I feel like I should be beautiful because I make this amount of money? Whatever external things we feel should make us beautiful, those can like fall through quickly, right? If we go back to Genesis and it says, let us make them in our image, and then those people who are made in those image in chapter 2 says they stood before one another, they were naked and they felt no shame. When we think about naked, we don't usually think about beauty. We think about naked, being vulnerable, our fullest self, we usually attach to them not enough. I need to hide. And here these people, Adam and Eve, treated their bodies as a gift, as a miracle to the other. Because when they show up in a room, they show up to someone they love, they don't have to pretend to be something different because they're enough. And for me, true beauty, at least for myself, is when I believe I'm enough. Again, this is a Richard Rohr thing. He has this mantra that says, I'm enough for God and God's enough for me. And with his breath, he just, and I've been saying that for years, just it's a mantra saying, I'm enough for God and God's enough for me. And I'm beautiful because I'm enough. And God's beautiful because God's enough. And if God's enough, I don't need anything else. I don't need to achieve. I don't need to produce. I can simply exist. Does that mean I might have to do some more push-ups? Sure. Does it mean I might have to become kinder in the way I talk to my friends? Sure. But it means in this space, God is available and accessible. I'm made in the image of God. I can access that and believe that I'm beautiful. And if that's true, then that means beauty is everywhere. Beauty is not attached to just me. Beauty is not just attached to what we produce as a group of friends or what we do even accomplish as a church, right? That means beauty is everywhere. And if beauty is everywhere, then our job, and I love talking about this, is the thing I love about Christ in the Gospels, I call Jesus the great reminder. Jesus is reminding people through miracles. Jesus is reminding people through TED Talks. Jesus is reminding people through bursts of wisdom, through tables, through eating, through clinking glasses, reminding them, you've always been good. You've always been beautiful. You just couldn't see it. They couldn't see it. You've always been deeply, deeply loved. And so when we go out into this crazy thing called this world, when we go out from here, the low-hanging fruit, and I'm speaking to me, the low-hanging fruit is to say like, hey, nice shirt, who shot the couch? Right? We can be sarcastic. There's time and place for that. There's time to like ride each other. There's times and place for that. But if we can go out in the world and remind each other of the beauty that is all around us, but more importantly, the beauty that's within, it changes everything. Like if you're a parent here, one thing that I really tried doing when I was a youth pastor is to tell parents what I loved about their kids just that night. I'm like, wow, your kid really threw that dodgeball really hard at my face. Was he strong, all right? Trying to find just something because I learned that when people share what they love about my kid, because I have this idea of my kid, especially when they were little, they're going to go to your house and they're going to break everything, right? And they're like, wow, your kid is really strong at breaking plastic. I'm like, I'm sorry, all right? But when they'd say, hey, your kid was really kind, or your kid paid attention, your kid helped out with blah, blah, I felt alive because they saw something beautiful in my kid. When we can remind each other the beauty that's within and all around us, it creates new realities. How do I know? Who here had in junior high had a teacher or a coach or a family member that said one negative thing and you still bring it up in therapy to this day? Okay, thank you. I'm like, there's got to be more than me, all right? Because at some point, that basketball coach said something to me, and I'm like, that's true. I'll never be a starter. I'll never achieve this. And I just like, that is my identity for I'll always be like fourth best, right? I've carried that with me my entire life, and that's helped me. It's helped drive me at some point. But man, I love it when my friends come and say, hey, Chris, I really love you. Ugh, I'm not going to cry, right? Those things make me feel alive because they're saying something that's true. And when we can remind the people around us the beauty that's within them and the beauty that they produce, it can create new realities. And in my experience, we need this more than ever. We need to remind each other that we are loved. We need to remind each other that we are more than just how much laundry we produce. We have to remind each other that we are more than just how much we get done at work. We are beautiful because we exist, because we're made in the image of God, because of Emmanuel, and we have this amazingly accessible God. And if we can believe all those to be true, what we have to offer this world is something incredibly good and beautiful. So here's where I end. Here's my invitation to you. Is to take some time. It's called epistemology, the idea and the study of how we came into knowledge of God. That's it. At what point did humanity and at what point did Chris come into knowledge that God exists? And I do believe that God exists. I've given my life to it. If that's true, what does that look like? How do I experience that beauty? And it could be a mantra as something as saying, God, you're enough for me and I'm enough for you. It could be reading Psalm 23 out loud once a day for a week. It could be reading Proverbs 1, right? It could be reading Psalms 1, all about the fear of God. It could be reading John 15 when Jesus goes through the prayer of I am the vine and you are the branches. Oh, it's so good. Just getting yourself familiar again with the goodness of God and whatever that looks like for you. And that could be an indigenous prayer. That could be a poem written by a shaman. That could be walking through Jay Cook singing your favorite song. Find a way of where you feel like you can access and experience the beauty of what we call divine. Number two, find, like, if you have your values, find a way to remind yourself the beauty that is you. That could be standing in front of the mirror and saying what you love. That could be writing out the things you're most proud of what you've accomplished. Whatever, get access to what you find beautiful. And third, and if I can encourage you, like I say, this week, how about today? Let's just shoot for today. Tell one person through text, face-to-face, social media, something that you love about them. Speak the beauty that's in the other and just see what happens. Just try it. And if it's positive, then maybe do it again. So I'm going to pray. I'd love to have you join me. So God, thank you for being so incredibly beautiful. And I also just give voice and acknowledge, man, there's some things that we have called God that are not so beautiful. And maybe there's things that we were told and convinced that we have to say that this part of God is beautiful, but even at a young age, we just realize, I don't know if I can get behind that. And so we just like let that stuff go. And God, let us experience the beauty of who you are again. And the energy and the light and the movement and the power and the wisdom and the moxie that comes from you and with you. And I ask that we'd find ways to participate in that song in that circle. That we're not outside of it, but that we're included. And help us be able to see and speak the beauty that's within. And help us be able to inspire and remind the beauty that's all around us to the people that we love. So Holy Spirit, will you use us to bring beauty and love and light everywhere we go. Amen. All right. If you'd like to process, you'd like to pray, you'd like to give some commentary or critique, I would welcome all of it. Or if you'd like to share something that you loved about the message or something you find beautiful, I'd love to hear all of it. So I'm going to be up here for a while. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and thank you for coming to Neighborhood Church.